Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So we're going to turn now to farm safety, because the number of accidents that take place on Irish farms, they account for up to 50% of all workplace fatalities. So what needs to be done to reduce this stark figure, and how can we make the agriculture sector a safer place to work? Now, those issues will be, of course, explored in Farm Safety Week later this month. And I'm joined now by Minister of State with responsibility for research and development, farm safety and new market development, Martin Hayden, and you're welcome to the studio, Minister. Thanks
Morning,
for coming in. But before we come to farm safety, I just want to go back to what we were talking about before the break, this new ban coming in on the XL bullies, which is a very dangerous dog linked to a number of recent attacks. And James Madden, a veterinary officer with Leitrim County Council, was explaining to us how it's going to work. Martina Kenny, who works for an animal rescue, My Lovely Horse, I mean, they're in a really difficult position now, because if those dogs are surrendered to them, they're either going to have to keep the dog until they reach the end of their natural life or have them put down.
So look, first of all, I think the debate so far on your show this morning has demonstrated that this is a challenging area. And one of the reasons from a policy perspective it is so challenging is because it spans a number of different departments. My own Department of Agriculture has responsibility for animal welfare. Heather Humphreys is the lead department for control of dogs in the Department of Rural Affairs. Department of Housing is responsible for our local authorities where our dog wardens are based. And that's a recipe for making it really hard to get everyone together and get stuff done down through the years. And that's why Minister Heather Humphreys pulled together the Control of Dogs group that brought representatives from all of those bodies together under the former Deputy Commissioner of An Garda Síochána, John Toomey, and they went through all of these issues. Mm-hmm. It's why Heather Humphreys, like some of the points you mentioned there in terms of resources, in terms of the role of the dog warden into the future, this will be challenging. But we can't forget why we're doing this. We're doing this because people have lost their lives to this breed of dogs. Young children have been attacked and destroyed, and needed really significant surgery afterwards. People have died because of some of these dogs. So it is a really serious intervention, but we don't underestimate the challenge there is in the enforcement of the changes that are coming. That's why Minister Humphreys allocated €2 million to local authorities for increased investment in our dog warden services. It's mm-hmm. why I'm aware some local authorities have dog warden positions advertised at present, because we do want to hire more, but we also want to strengthen their equipment. And
James Madden, you know, wasn't convinced that those new appointments are imminent. You know, those new dog wardens promised in 2023.
So, again, this isn't an excuse, but every local authority has responsibility for its own area. Not all local authorities are the same. So I'm aware that in somewhere like Cork, there are 15 dog wardens, which is really good and a lot. And then there's other counties that have much less. So it is on a county by county basis, mm-hmm. but we have provided the funding. And I understand, I won't take the minister's announcement away from her, but I understand there is further funding going to be announced today as well for local authorities to drive on with that investment.
Right. And they'll be backed by the guards as well.
Absolutely.
Do you know how hard it will be to get a certificate of exemption? Because you'll have owners of XL bullies now thinking, well, am I going to be allowed to keep the dog or not?
Look, we'll have to see how that goes. But the other thing to bear in mind here is that, Northern Ireland and the UK have brought in these bans as well. And we know there's been a number of fatalities in the UK, so there's a very good reason for that. But particularly with Northern Ireland, on the one island, you know, it is important that we move in line with the steps that they are taking as well. Mm-hmm. We're not being an outlier here. We are trying to get uniformity of the approach across the island.
And we know and that, as well that a lot of their dogs have ended up here.
As an island, It's not great to have different animal welfare rules on either side of an invisible border. So that's why it is the right thing to do here. We will work through all of the issues as they come up. A lot of them have been preempted already by the Control of Dog Group, headed up by John Toomey. And we'll work through those issues as they come. We will provide the resources that are there. We're very slow to do this. This is not something we're quick to do. But mm-hmm. the threat on the other side is, and you know, everybody is horrified by the case in Nicole Morey and the case in Wexford and beyond.
Alejandro Misan there in Wexford as well.
As well,
2 years ago. Right, listen, we'll leave that one there. We're getting lots of messages in, so we'll come back to that. But we want to talk now about farm safety, and I'm joined by Norman Rohan, who is General Manager of Embrace Farm, which is a support network for farm families following a serious injury or sudden death. Norma, good morning to you.
Morning, Claire.
Thanks for being with us this morning. I know you founded Embrace with your husband after a tragedy hit your own family. Will you just take us through what happened and how you ended up founding the organisation?
Yes, in 2012, I was just home from hospital after having our first child when an accident happened on our farm while the public health nurse was visiting. A piece of machinery fell on my father-in-law's head. He was rushed to hospital and placed on life support for a number of days, and those machines were then switched off couple of days later. So our week started out very lovely with the birth of our first child, and it ended in tragedy that week.
Mm-hmm. So you know all of the fallout from this after the death of your father-in-law, Liam Rowan, who people will know very well in the farming world. I know he was involved in the World Ploughing Championships and represented Ireland many times. But lots of things happen in the aftermath of a death like that in a farm accident. And that led you, didn't it, to setting up Embrace?
It did. In 2014, we held the first remembrance service for all of those farmers who have died in sudden circumstances on our farms around Ireland. In 2014, we read out 94 names. In the 30th of June, just gone, at our 11th service, we read out almost 350 names. They're all loved ones, with families left reeling and in shock. And traumatised from what has happened, and also those who survived very life-altering serious injuries. So the Remembrance Service is an opportunity for them to try and come together and support each other and knowing what they all go through.
And of course, Norma, the work of the farm has to go on, you know, even when a tragedy like that happens. And often the person who has died is the person who knows all of the ins and outs of how the farm works. And the people are left behind are really trying to deal with their grief, but also trying to keep that business going at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. The animals, they still need to be milked, fed. The crops still need to be harvested. Silage needs to be cut. I know through my own father-in-law's funeral, something went wrong with a calf feeder down the yard, and Brian had to leave that and go tend to that. And it's the same with every other farm family. They can't put a sign on the gate to say we're closed for 2 weeks due to a bereavement. It's just not possible. So, yeah, widows and family members are left trying to pick up the pieces then, trying to continue to run the farm, which they may or may not have been involved in the day-to-day running of beforehand. They have to look after possibly children's grief. They could have their in-laws living beside them. Most family farms have more than one generation relying on an income from that farm. But it's the simple things, maybe like the wet spot in the field or the little niggly bit with the tractor to get it started. Those simple things to the bigger things like the bank account only being in that farmer's name that has suddenly died and trying to get a will executed so that the farm business can continue, bills can continue to be paid and income can continue to come in. And it's where to turn for all of those things. Many spouses have off-farm jobs now, as most farms aren't sustainable for farms and for families on their own. So that interaction with family members may not be there now for the day-to-day running. So when a farmer suddenly dies, it's like, where do you turn? What do you do? What do you do with the business? Do you continue it or not? And all those decisions have such impact on those around you.
Okay, so you know we have Minister of State Martin Hayden here with us in the studio. So what more do you think needs to be done from a government point of view to help farmers before these accidents happen and then in the aftermath for the families left behind?
Well, it's only in recent years I see that the farmer is being made as important as the product that they are producing. And to be honest, I can only see that really coming through in the last year or two with the different policies that are there. And I feel it has to start back at that point. There's no point in having products unless you have the farmer to produce it. And they're of good health, sound mind, and able to do that. So that work has started. I would like to see that continue. I know we'll eventually have a change of government quite soon. And in the next program for government, I would like to see that area of responsibility within the Department of Agriculture to remain with an appointed minister in that, because I think that has made an impact on a number of initiatives that are happening in recent years.
Okay, Norman, thank you very much for joining us. And if anyone wants to get in touch with Embrace Farm, they can find all the details on embracefarm.com. But Martin Hayden, to come back to you, I mean, the figures are really stark here. Fatalities in farming and agriculture account for 50% of all Irish workplace deaths, but farms and farmers only make up 6% of our workforce. It's a really poor record, isn't it?
And that's why government, at the start of this government term, appointed for the first time ever a dedicated minister with responsibility for farm safety. When I got that role and responsibility as part of my role as Minister of State, normally it was one of 100 things that a senior minister had responsibility for. And I do think it has made a difference. That's allowed me within the Department of Agriculture to set up a specialist unit within the department, get a dedicated fund in place that wasn't there previously. While we spent lots of money on different things, it was a bit fragmented. And I think what Norma refers to there, to the different initiatives, I get very strong sense from everyone across the agriculture sector that there is that sense that all of our work from education to investment to knowledge transfer is making a difference in terms of changing the culture. I'm really slow to talk about statistics because for every one number, that's a family, it's a whole community devastated. Yeah. But it is. The farm place and a farmer is far more likely to die in a workplace incident than any of the other 2.5 million workers
and
in this country.
Particularly at times when they're under pressure. And we've had spells of really bad weather. And people might remember back in April when we had that, you know, incessant rain and farmers were finding it really difficult. There was a blitz of health and safety inspections announced for farms. And the IFA came out very strongly and said, this is not the time to do that. How did you regard that call? Is it not a helpful intervention from the IFA, given that safety, I'm sure from your point of view, has to be paramount no matter what else is going on?
Oh, no, yes, I remember that clearly. Like at that time, it was the same time I was on this show talking about the fodder challenges that there were. It was April, it was Easter time. What that was just the HSA had a specific targeted machinery inspection program planned that they deferred because the weather was so bad. Those machines weren't out on the road or in the fields. The normal farm safety inspections that happened continued. The HSA, which don't come under my department, is the statutory body, the Health and Safety Authority, for safety in the workplace. And they have a number of different approaches, and they recognised at that time that due to the inclement weather, the fact that land wasn't trafficable, those machines weren't moving. Mm-hmm. So they just delayed it. It happened later on. Those machines weren't in operation at that time anyway. Yeah. But normal inspections happen anyway. I have to say the farming organisations have worked very closely with me. You know, the IFA will take the lead on Farm Safety Week, which starts on the 22nd of July. But all of the farming organisations, all of the different bodies across, and what I've worked hard on as well is industry. You know, our co-ops, realising that the farmer is the most important part of the whole business model here, to have so many farmers putting themselves at risk because of a poor attitude to risk, that is improving now, but that was there inherently in our industry. Working across all the sectors, we are bringing about that change. And the statistics, as I say, I don't like to refer to them, but they do bear that out. The 5-year average at present is 16 a year. That was 22 a year 5 years ago, but it's still unacceptably high. So that's why we continue to make the investments, as well as ongoing awareness campaigns. You know, I'm really glad that the Target Agricultural Modernisation Scheme, which is the investment scheme for farmers to apply for grants for, I introduced a 60% grant for farm safety measures. A third, nearly 7,000 applications for farmers who are making investments on their farms have applied in under the farm safety measure that wasn't there before.
But you can't stop farmers who see good weather for a few days and try their best to work 18, 20 hours to get everything done that they need to do. That's the sort of pressure that they're under, and that's
absolutely
when accidents happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, this is the two most busiest months of the year because children are off school as well, and the farmyard, and I know it myself growing up at home, it's the most exciting place to be when it's harvest time, when it's busy. And again, that's adds the danger. And what we are doing is changing that culture, making sure farm safety is an integral part of all of our thought processes. And it has changed, because that time when I was a child in that farm in South Kildare growing up, I would get on top of a load of bales with my cousin, and you know, I think if a farmer was seen to allow that happen today, they'd probably be arrested, and it definitely would be socially unacceptable.
It was probably the 80s, was it, where we did all sorts of dangerous things.
Yeah, I'm showing my age now. And like you've flipped that over now to one of the programs I've introduced and working with AgriAware on Safe Farm Futures, where we've been in 330 primary schools with a farm safety program. We've reached over 23,000 pupils. And that pester power that we all know as parents that kids have, where it was as me as that young child looking to do something dangerous, they're now taught about where the hazards are on the farm, and they're using their voice at the kitchen table and in the yard to point out to the parent or to the grandparents that what's happening there isn't safe.
Okay.
And really what this is about changing that attitude to risk, identifying the hazards and not putting them on the long finger.
And we hear a lot about accidents involving quads used on farms. Do you think there's a need for more regulation there?
So quads are a good example that where we do need to introduce legislation and make statutory changes, we will do that. That legislation changed on the 1st of November last year. So now it is mandatory for farmers or anybody who's a quad owner to undergo a quad training before using it, because it is a very specific machine that can topple over quite easily with a high centre of balance. And also now it's mandatory to wear a helmet. But again, I am very strongly of the view carrot works better than stick. We'll use stick when we have to. Mm-hmm. But I introduced a farm safety measure last year where we managed to grant aid as an incentive. It wasn't the full amount, it was a percentage of it, the cost of the helmet. And we have over 1,000 helmets on farms now that may not have been there otherwise. And it was a way of highlighting to the farmers that change was coming. So change is something that is something that has to be worked on. It is a busy time of the year in the farms, but you know, we are working really, really hard across the sector and we are making big changes there. But for every farmer and their family members listening this morning, I just want to drive home the message that, you know, that one thing that you see on the farm that, you know, you recognise as a hazard that you've been thinking of, don't put it on the long finger. Make that change now. Because for when you deal with Norma and the Great Embrace Charity and victims who have suffered life-changing injuries or lost a loved one, the incident that happened in the blink of an eye and no one ever thought it would happen to them.
All right, Mr. Martin Hayden, thanks very much for coming in. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.